I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're Building Bridges. We now head to a forum on organizing, repression, and trade policy in the Philippines.
As U.S. negotiating meetings for Biden's largest trade initiative, the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, get underway, Filipino workers in the U.S. linked call centers are fighting to unionize and demand that international trade policies uphold fundamental human rights. Now the forum, Worker Organizing, Repression, and Trade Policy in the Philippines, with our moderators, labor reporter from the Real News Network, Maximilian Alvarez, and Ryan Harvey from the Public Citizens Global Trade Watch.
Despite the deep repression of the Filipino labor movement, workers have continued organizing for better wages and working conditions. Their struggle and the role that international trade agreements play in shaping the contours of everyday life and work for people throughout the Asia Pacific is the focus of our conversation. We are joined by Filipino labor leader Mylene Cabalona, president of the BPO Industry Employees Network, or BIEN. Mylene is joining us from the Philippines, and we'll talk about the movement for workers' rights in the country, what the current reality is on the ground for labor organizers and activists. We'll also hear from Elena Lopez from the Communications Workers of America, CWA, about how U.S. labor unions have built partnerships with Filipino unions like BIEN, and the role that U.S. groups and individuals can play in demanding and ensuring stronger labor standards for workers around the globe through international law. We'll also hear from Adrian Bonificio, National Chairperson of BIEN USA, who will discuss the network of Filipino solidarity groups in the U.S., how the Filipino diaspora is organizing to support the struggles of workers, farmers, and other social movements in the Philippines. Finally, we'll be joined by Melinda St. Louis, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, who will give us a deep dive into the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, or IPEF, and the role trade deals could, but rarely do, play in upholding or even raising labor standards and protections.
Elena, you're with the Communications Workers of America, one of the largest unions in the U.S., representing everyone from telecommunications workers to flight attendants, journalists, and healthcare workers. I actually first heard about groups like BION, who are with us today, because CWA had held a rally in solidarity with workers in the Philippines a few years ago in D.C. Tell us about the work you've been doing in partnership with workers groups in the Philippines.
CWA represent workers in the telecom industry among many sectors, included in that call center workers. For the years, U.S. call centers are shifting work overseas, downsizing, moving call centers, shutting down call centers here in the U.S. in all regions and all industries. They're shifting them overseas. And these are good family supporting jobs. You know, the average wage for a call center worker in 2022 was about $17 an hour. So when these call center jobs move, communities are devastated. There's a loss of income. But in many cases, what we're seeing happening is that companies know that they can move these jobs overseas because they can profit off the exploitation of workers like in the Philippines. It can be literal life and death for a worker trying to organize or fight for better wages. Heard stories from our friends and allies in the Philippines, like Mylene, about the persecution, the red tagging, and the attacks on labor activists and human rights defenders, because it's much more than just an attack on labor. From our union, we know that we really can't fight for our own dignity and respect here without helping our brothers and sisters abroad. You know, CWA has had a long-standing relationship with Filipino workers. CWA, we've worked with, I think, Filipino workers for a long time and many years at this point. But it really started that when in 2016, when our members were on strike at Verizon, Filipino workers reached out to help us in our fight because Verizon actually routed calls from our striking call centers to them. It was really a brave act of solidarity on their end because of the repression of labor rights there that really resulted in a growing partnership between our two groups. 2019, a group of CWA workers traveled to the Philippines to meet with workers there. It was just truly one of the most eye-opening experiences of their life. You know, they met with call center workers and union leaders and really heard firsthand accounts about how Filipino workers who participated in any union activity were subjected to physical threats and severe intimidation. They met Ann Kruger, who was a union organizer who showed members around Manila and hosted them at home during their stay. But shortly after their visit, you know, her union office and many others were raided by the police, and she was arrested under false charges because of her union activity. Even just 2 years ago, we saw the Armed Forces of the Philippines and the Philippine National Police perform a series of raids that led to the murder of 9 labor activists and 6 others. Victims were advocating for human and labor rights protections. We see this sort of targeting and attacks. It really leaves a chilling effect on labor activists and their work, which puts more downward pressure on wages and working conditions in the U.S. We know that giant telecom companies are preying on Filipino workers. They're getting paid pennies on the dollars and don't have basic rights to organize. Really don't want it to be us against them. Global labor solidarity is so important because our struggles are all connected. Our fight for better working conditions, wages, and unions is all connected. When you talk to union members and workers, they get that. That argument resonates with them. They understand that we all have this common goal of fighting corporate greed and putting power into the hands of workers. It's important that we as American workers get involved and unions get involved because we face many of the same struggles that workers face abroad. We face exploitation in the workplace here along them. We can't let multinational corporations and corporate greed divide us here. Workers across the globe are in this together. And when we stand together, we fight together, we all win. You know, workers in the Philippines must be able to exercise their right to join a union without fear of retaliation or death even. We cannot stand idly by as we watch the government of the Philippines continue to harass and target workers. So when we're talking about any trade negotiations, whether it's in the Indo-Pacific or not, we need to have strong labor law and strong enforcement mechanisms to that so we can hold countries accountable for the human rights abuses that are going on there.
Mylene, I want to go to you next. Tell us about yourself and the work that you do, about BM, and a little bit about the state of the labor movement in the Philippines right now.
Yes, I'm Mylene Cabalona, National President of BN Philippines. We are the call center workers. We're called the BPO Industry Employees Network. A call center worker is only getting an average salary of $350 to $400 monthly. And considering that the industry is already considered a better off industry compared to others, working in the provinces could bring this income to as low as $200 to $250 monthly. We work on a graveyard shift to follow the time zone of customers that we're serving, provide a world-class seller service, which our country used as a marketing strategy for stakeholders to invest in the Philippines, and yet collective expenses allocated by our companies to pay our salaries account only to around 10 to 25% of the gross revenue. So we're taking a stand. We are now organizing workers so we can collectively assert from the 10% profit through unions and CBAs, who can make it 30% or even 50%. Since we are committed to organize the largest, most advanced and comprehensive union in the industry. We are currently working on the legislation for the Magna Carta for BPO. Once passed into law, this will give better platform for BPO workers to organize more unions for better wages and benefits, secure our safety and enforce health protocol. But it does not stop there. We know how unfair policies are enforced in the country for different labor sectors, and that includes the, you know, us, the BPO. Unique, there is a creation of an export processing zones that restrict workers from organizing unions, and that's only in the industry for us. A new hire employee of a call center company in the Philippines will experience disenfranchisement to join unions from the very first day of joining the company. New hire orientation includes branding of unions or joining unions as illegal, and organizing union is considered a terror act. Of course, not surprisingly, as the government uses this like a marketing strategy to encourage companies to invest in the country. And this is because of those trade agreements. frameworks that puts workers even more at the mercy of these big tech companies, where workers will actually suffer based on the embedded biases in the algorithm. And ensure, I mean, this would actually put more workers in a precarious labor arrangement, especially us in the call center. Now, we live in a world where the economic conditions are ripe to further advance organizing and union building efforts. The demands to form unions is ever present as companies and government continue to enforce policies for workers against the wall. Mandatory overtime, unhealthy and unsafe working environment, unfair labor practices. These conditions makes union organizing very conducive, regardless of the attacks, red tagging, intimidation, forced disappearances, and a lot of harassment for union organizers. So comrades in the labor movement, resistance to any crisis is only effective when we join in solidarity among other labor movements. Bien Philippines is turning 11 years this 2023. What we have become, we started with 13 members. Right now we've grown to about 4,000 to 5,000 from 45 PPO companies in different PPO hubs. This is far from over. We have 1.6 million Filipino working in the call center industry. They are projecting to increase this to 1.9 million by the end of the year. And what is 4,000 compared to 1.9 million? Not even enough to scratch the surface. So we take the challenge to make us 4,000 to 40,000 or to even 400,000. We will generate waves after waves of resistance. It is our dream, our vision, our goal. Thank you so much, and long live the working people of the world.
Mylene, thanks so much for joining us, and of course for all the work that you and your fellow organizers and workers are doing there. Adrian, you're the national chairperson of Bayan USA. It's a coalition of more than 24 progressive Filipino organizations in the U.S. Tell us a bit about the work that Bayan and other Filipino diaspora groups are doing, both here and elsewhere around the world, and then also the issues that you're focusing on right now.
Bayan USA is a grassroots alliance of almost 30 organizations across the U.S. We're fighting for genuine sovereignty. We're fighting for real democracy in the Philippines. Bayan has historically been at the forefront of fighting against neoliberal and unequal trade agreements between the U.S. and the Philippines since its formation in the 1980s. Then we are under the dictatorship of Ferdinand Marcos Sr., the father of the current president, who ushered in a neoliberal era in the Philippine economy. Marcos Sr. opened up the Philippines to unmitigated trade and participation in the global market. He had many infrastructure projects that were funded both by the public, but also massive foreign loans from the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and other agencies, which were meant to win the favor of the people. But their true impact was actually felt in the economic crisis that came as a result of skyrocketing debt. And so the people are actually still paying for that debt to this day. Under Marcos Sr., we also saw the shift to an import-dependent and export-oriented, meaning that we're importing a lot and the goods being produced or grown in the Philippines are being exported to the economy. That was a direct result of the liberalization and deregulation of trade in the country. This persistent economic crisis, it spurred mass discontent and it spurred a people's movement. That's why Marcos eventually declared martial law in the Philippines in the 1970s, that this goes hand in hand with political repression and fascism, especially when the people's movements are fighting back to change the status quo. The formation of Bayan to unite the people against economic and political violence was super important. We continue to play that role until today. The current president, Marcos Jr., so the son of the dictator, has made it a trademark of his administration to travel across the world to just cement deals that benefit those in power. Marcos and allies in the Congress are pushing for constitutional change to open up the Philippine economy to more foreign investments, more foreign ownership of land, industries. This is really laying the groundwork to make deals that would be negotiated at APEC more feasible. What does this mean for Filipino people today? Of course, lessening restrictions and protections for workers, driving up the cost of basic goods, inflation that's the highest in over a decade. It also means that for Filipinos overseas, our remittances are worth less because the money we're sending back is not able to buy as much for our families back home. Reliance on imports, peasants and farmers, and also just reinforces the fact that our agricultural sector in the country, in the Philippines, because of the overdependence on foreign investments in the Philippines, stunted development of sustainable national industries. And so the Philippines looked for service work abroad to help to supplement the economy. And so the labor export, the forced migration of Filipinos, spiked in the 2000s as the government relied more and more on these remittances to stay afloat because of trade deficits. Currently, over 6,000 Filipinos are leaving the country every day to find work abroad. Tied with these economic policies, we're also wary of the ongoing political repression that Elena, that Mylene mentioned, go hand in hand with the repression of workers' rights. So red tagging, extrajudicial killings, mass arrests continue, and there's even seeking of support from the U.S. government from this. So U.S. military aid, police aid, currently the U.S. military and the Philippine military are training in the largest ever joint exercise. Over 12,000 U.S. troops are currently in Philippine soil. Further militarization does not bode well for the workers, for farmers, and the Filipino people. And together with the organizations on this call, with the International League of People's Struggle, we are part of efforts fighting to confront Marcos, to confront Biden, to confront other world leaders at the upcoming APEC meetings in Detroit, in Seattle, in San Francisco, wherever they go, we'll be there. So please join us. For any Filipinos who might be watching, we really encourage folks to join with us, to link with our organizations.
Hell yeah. Well, Adrian, thank you so much for the incredible work that y'all are doing. Melinda, I want to go to you. Now, you are the director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch Division, and you have been watching kind of how, you know, U.S. trade policy has been shaped over the last three decades. So what does trade have to do with everything that we've heard so far tonight?
And Public Citizens Global Trade Watch has been monitoring the impacts of U.S. trade policy on workers, consumers, and the environment for decades. And unfortunately, it has not been a positive story for the vast majority of us in the U.S. and in around the world. Because trade negotiations have historically taken place in utter secrecy. Not utter secrecy for everyone, for us, but there is a trade advisory system in the United States that's made up of 500 corporate advisors that have access to the negotiating text, who are able to influence what is being negotiated, while the public doesn't know what's in them until they're finished and it's too late to make any real changes. And so the result over the past decades has been that there have been rules embedded in these agreements that benefit big corporations and make it easier for them to take advantage of low wages and lack of worker and environmental protections, and facilitated, you know, as we talk about, a race to the bottom. And this has happened not just because they've lowered tariffs or the taxes that we place on imported goods, but it's also because the rules themselves were particularly rigged to benefit multinational corporations at the expense of workers. For example, there were rules inserted that limited our government's ability to pass types of laws to protect food safety. Pharmaceutical companies snuck in terms that allowed them to expand their monopolies and block generic competition for life-saving medicines. They inserted extreme rules that allowed sweeping corporate rights for foreign investors, to allow corporations even to sue governments over laws that they thought would impact their profit making, and then they were decided in unaccountable tribunals outside of our courts and have awarded billions of dollars in taxpayer money to corporations around environmental and public health laws. And none of these rules were really about trade. They were really about expanding corporate power, and they embedded them in this idea of free trade. Republicans and Democrats, no matter who was in the White House since the 1990s until very recently, pushed this model of corporate-dominated trade agreements. So, you know, unsurprisingly, there's been massive opposition, both here in the United States and in other countries, to this model. And so one of the ways they addressed this opposition and political backlash was to kind of tack on rules on labor rights and the environment, you know, kind of as an afterthought initially. They were weak and meaningless standards that were unenforceable in the original, the North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, for example, had these side agreements that were really just an afterthought to try to get them through Congress. In subsequent agreements, there's been more and more pressure from labor unions and many in our movement. They started to include labor and environmental provisions into the core text of the agreements, but again, window dressing is still very weak standards compared to the pro-corporate rules that were binding and required, you know, and that they could, the corporations could sue governments, but that was not the case for workers. And it really did not result in any meaningful improvements on the ground. And so, you know, we saw this continued race to the bottom. We have, as our through cross-border solidarity, we've managed to stop some of the biggest attempts to expand this model. So we've had some success, even though it's been a pretty dire story, to support independent unions in Mexico. So that was a positive development. And President Biden has also responded to this political shift. He previously supported these past trade pacts, but now has seen the writing on the wall, and he's been calling for worker-centric trade. And he's insisted that these new trade initiatives, such as the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, or IPEF, will not look like traditional free trade agreements. So fair enough, that sounds pretty good. But the devil will always be in the details. And so far, we're not allowed to see what's being negotiated. There's unfortunately still this very unbalanced trade advisory system with hundreds of corporate advisors and just a handful of labor groups that have access to the text. And it's totally classified for the rest of us. We've been demanding a more open process to produce a better outcome that benefits workers here and in the Philippines. But we know that they actually signed five-year secrecy agreements by all the countries participating in the negotiations. Again, not a great sign. The negotiations started last year. They're picking up pace as the U.S. would like to deliver some results by the APEC meeting that that Adrian mentioned, that they're hosting later this year. But, you know, countries participating with such dire labor rights situations like the Philippines, like what we heard in the Philippines, but also Malaysia, Vietnam, Thailand, we need to ensure that labor and human rights are required as conditions of benefiting from any commercial part of the deal if we're talking about worker-centric trade. And we need to build off of any enforcement mechanisms that were included, as I mentioned, in the most recent U.S., Mexico, and Canada agreement. We know corporations would like nothing more than to turn this into another corporate-dominated deal. And in particular, and it was interesting that Mylene mentioned, big tech companies see this as an opportunity to insert binding rules over so-called digital trade. In order to thwart government's efforts to regulate them and hold them accountable, even in, here in the U.S. And that has huge implications for consumers, but also for workers. We know that there's some people in the administration, such as U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai, who have been trying to move this IPEF away from the traditional model and to try to fix some of the problems from past pacts. But others in the administration just want any deal to counter China's influence in the region, and corporate interests continue to have this privileged access. So we really can't let IPEF fly under the radar. I really think that would be a recipe for corporate interests to dominate once again. So it's important for us to reinforce the importance of centering worker rights in a meaningful way in any commercial engagement we have with the Philippines or any other country. And my colleagues, Ryan and also Aisha, will talk a little bit more about some of the education and advocacy events that we're planning also in Detroit, as trade ministers will be coming from across the Asia Pacific, again, to ground zero, Detroit, where manufacturing has been hollowed out due to bad trade policies. And so it will be important for us to show up there as well. So,
awesome. Thanks so much, Melinda. Melinda, I want to bring in my colleague, Aisha, and then what do we got going on in Detroit?
I am an organizer at Global Trade Watch, and I'm based in Michigan specifically. What we kind of have going on in Detroit is, again, the finance ministers from our 13 countries are going to be convening in Detroit, and we have planned a day of action around the meetings. And so that day of action is going to be taking place on May 20th. And what we have planned is a morning starting off with some educational workshops and some panels put on by various organizations, followed by a rally in the afternoon to rally people together and go through downtown Detroit and make sure that we bring in more supporters as we go. We're working with various organizations in Michigan, including Michigan Climate Action Network and others. And we would love to get more people involved, more people to come to the events, and more organizations to join us. So if anybody would like to get in touch and, you know, join us in our efforts, my email is my first name, ASIDDIQUI@citizen.org, and we would love to get you all involved.
And Adrian, before we jump to you, I also make sure to mention that the events in Detroit, there's going to be a very similar mobilization in August in Seattle. And if you get in touch with Aisha, we can also connect you with the folks over there from the Washington Fair Trade Coalition, the Trade Justice Education Fund. Adrian, talk about the Bay Area at the end of the year.
We'll definitely also be there in Detroit, in Seattle, for the different ministerial meetings happening in May and August. In November, there will be the big APEC summit in San Francisco, so we are planning to mobilize there as well to confront these world leaders and really put the people's issues at the forefront. So together, Bayan USA, the International League of People Struggles US, and other partners are organizing efforts, building coalition work to fight back against all of these neoliberal attacks on the people. And so if you'd like to join the efforts, you can also email us at bayanusa@proton.me.
Everyone listening, definitely follow all of these unions and organizations and follow the work that they're doing on social media. Go to their website and be sure to mark your calendars for these upcoming events, because one of the things that's coming out of this discussion, and hopefully one of the things we have all learned after decades of watching unfold without any say-so from us, the rank and file of our respective countries, is that we can't just keep entrusting the shaping of these deals to a shadowy cabal of corporate advisors and government, you know, officials. We got to dispense with that yesterday, right? And we all have a stake in this, and there are things that we can all be doing in our respective corners of the world, but also collaborating across international boundaries, much like capital itself does, right? So if the bosses are collaborating across borders, we, the working people of the world, should be doing very much the same for an independent union, right? So these are just a couple of stories of struggle that show what regular working people standing up for what's right and standing with their brothers, sisters, and siblings around the world, what can come of that. Now, I just really want to implore y'all, as I do all the time here at The Real News, and as everyone here, I think, has stressed in their own beautiful and important way, we can actually have a hand in shaping the world that we inhabit. We don't just have to accept what these larger imposing forces give us. That is the soul, always, of the labor movement. And the more that we carry that internationally, the more that we let that guide us to crafting better trade policy, to carving a pathway to a more permanent peace and a more sustainable and livable planet, the better. Thank you all so much for being part of that fight wherever you are. Please keep fighting. Please keep following this fight in particular.
We were listening to worker organizing, repression, and trade policy in the Philippines for Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're building bridges for the working class to educate, agitate, and organize for all power to the working class. Thanks for listening.